So I'm just checking, can we start the following session now for IT people? Okay, thank you. So, good morning everyone and welcome to GAC session 21 on GDPR and who is privacy law discussion, scheduled at 9:30 for 60 minutes on Tuesday, March 13th. So, and thank you to our public safety working group. It was an interesting session this morning, and I'm sure it's going to be an interesting discussion on GDPR as well. So I'm just wondering if we can very quickly and briefly say what's GDPR in case someone in the room, I mean, let me do this very, very briefly and then we get into the discussion so that we're sure that everyone is on the same page. So GDPR is the General Data Protection Regulation, and it's the European General Data Protection Regulation, and it intends to strengthen and unify data protection for all individuals within the European Union. And I stand to be corrected, of course, if anything is not as accurate as it should be. It should take effect on the 25th of May 2018. And the aim of the GDPR is to protect all EU citizens and residents from privacy and data breaches. And it applies to all companies processing and holding personal data of people residing in the European Union, irrespective or regardless of the company's location. Accordingly, it was important to make sure that ICANN contracts are GDPR compliant, so that ICANN registries and registrars do not find themselves violating GDPR or operators finding themselves breaching their national privacy regulations. As you may have witnessed the discussions, we have, some people would like to see as many public information as possible. Others would like to see as minimum public information as possible. So there is a wide range of discussion here. And of course, the main thing is that whatever we arrive at should be GDPR compliant. So just this was very quickly to give a brief to everyone because I understand we have so many new representatives and I was not sure whether they even know the term, what it stands for. So with this please. So I have France first and then go ahead, France.
Sorry, not France, but just to complete what Manal has said very eloquently. But GDPR, so the issue with GDPR and ICANN is something, and again I'm speaking for the newcomers who might not be familiar with the technical terms of ICANN, how GDPR will impact ICANN is because of a database called Whois, and so it's a database about that contains data, including some personal data, about registrants. What is a registrant? Because maybe some newcomer might not know that. It's someone or some organization, and you will see that this distinction might be important later, that registers a domain name. And this Whois database is maintained by registries and registrars based on a policy that is developed by ICANN community and enforced by ICANN through the contracts ICANN has with registrars and registries. And the issue we have is that we realize, well, ICANN.org has realized recently that the Whois system, how it works now, with a public access to a bunch of data, is not compliant with the GDPR. So a few months ago, ICANN.org has started a process to make the Whois system compliant with GDPR. They actually hired a law firm to help them doing that. And they've designed or begin to design a new system to replace the Whois database. And as you will notice soon, the pace we're in is extremely fast because ICANN has produced some documents very recently. So on 28th of February, they released some documents called the calzone, if I'm correct. They have some of a food metaphor here for some reason. And so we, as GAC, we were encouraged to give a response to this calzone before this meeting. So it's why we organized a conference call last week to try to analyze this proposed interim model and see how it fits with GAC's interests and objectives. And actually, ICANN released another document on the 8th or 9th of March, which is called a cookbook. That was a food metaphor again, which is a much bigger document of 60 pages, exploring some ways to make the Whois system compliant with GDPR. So just to complete and give you a bit of a broader picture.
Thank you very much, Gilan. And one more piece of information that might be of special interest to the GAC is the accreditation of who should get access to non-public data. So this is also a topic of interest to the GAC. So before handing to Catherine and Laureen to kickstart the discussion, and sorry for taking time of the discussion, but hoping that we have more interactive feedback. We're also having a discussion on GDPR after the coffee break, so we still have more time even to discuss, so we can simply continue the discussion, because we had a session after the coffee break to follow up on the cross-community session of yesterday. And we have this discussion now, so both could feed into each other, of course. So over to you, Catherine or Laureen.
Thank you. Thank you, Monal and Gilan, because that is a great way to set the stage. And keeping with these food metaphors, it's a lot to digest, isn't it? So I thought I might start in little bites, because one of my spouse's favorite phrases when things get overwhelming is, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So what I would like to do is take this in small bites. And I'm also mindful that some people are very familiar with these issues, know all the jargon and what everything means. And for some people, again, it's a bit indigestible. So I thought I would at least briefly talk about what the Whois is and why it's important. And I'll ask for the experts in the room, forgive me in advance for telling you what you already know. And for the newcomers, I hope it's helpful. So what is the Whois? It's like a telephone book. It's a telephone book for who owns domain names and a lot of other information about particular domain names. Who's used a telephone book here? Who's used the yellow pages and the white pages? Yeah, I know maybe it's a little dated, but this would be the virtual system that provides a telephone book. So some of the information you can find in the current Whois system that anyone can find by using one of the various portals that let you find Whois information is who registered the domain name, their email address, their physical address, their phone number, technical contacts to reach out to if there's a problem, and the email for that technical contact, administrative contact. You can find out when the domain name was registered. You could find out who the registrar is. That's typically the entity that sold the domain name to the individual or corporation. So you can find out a lot of information about a domain name. In a sense, it is like both yellow pages and white pages. Again, to continue with this metaphor, it contains information about individuals, like the white pages, and it also contains information about companies, about organizations, about legal entities, like the yellow pages. So why is this important? Why do we care about it? Why do we care that it might change? There are a number of important public policy concerns about the information that is available to the public at large in the WHOIS. There are privacy concerns that this information can be misused, that this information isn't appropriate to be disclosed to the public. And there are also concerns from users who want to keep as much information as possible public because of legitimate uses and legitimate purposes. For example, law enforcement uses this information when there are malicious activities to investigate who might be controlling a domain name that's being used for counterfeit, for example. And the WHOIS can provide basic starting point information, who owns it, who's the registrar. Law enforcement can also look at an email address and then pursue further investigative efforts. For example, and we heard this in the community session already, for example, to figure out if other domain names that have that same email address in common are being used for malicious activities. So it's an important step one. But this is not just about law enforcement. There are all sorts of other user groups that use this information and rely on this information. Cybersecurity practitioners whose focus is really on keeping the internet safe for you and I, everyone in this room, they use that information to perform all sorts of activities that we don't know about that nevertheless keep the internet a safer space for us. They're sort of an early warning system for problems that they may see involving the security and stability of the DNS. That's the core, one of the core mandates of ICANN, and they can detect those problems and act on those problems, and some of the key information that they use for their important work is in the WHOIS. And if they no longer have access to that information, or if it's very difficult and time-consuming to access that information, it could have a negative impact on public safety. Who else uses the WHOIS system? You and I may use the WHOIS system. The FTC, where I work, the Federal Trade Commission, the United States' leading privacy and consumer protection enforcement agency, collects complaints from consumers when they've been ripped off and they want us to know about it. And when we look at those complaints and read the narratives, I paid $400 to buy this timeshare, when I got to it, they didn't know who I was. And when I tried to contact the folks who sold me that timeshare, they didn't respond. Well, the next sentence in that complaint often reads, "So I looked up the domain name in the WHOIS, and I found that this is the person responsible." We know this, and we because we looked at our complaints and did a search of it, and over a multi-year period, we found over 4,000 complaints that referenced the WHOIS system as a tool for the public to find out about domain names that have engaged in deceptive activities when the public wants to try and resolve its own complaint. The public also uses this for just due diligence. If I'm going to buy an $800 purple lighting fixture, and before I give my credit card over to that company, I may want to decide that I'm going to find out a little bit more information about this company. Since I'm not going to Home Depot, my brick and mortar store, I'm going to the one that sells the lovely modern purple high-tech fixture that I can't find anyplace else but this place on the web, I may want to find out about this company too. Try and figure out if it's legitimate. If I find out the name, I may put that name on the internet and see if it's been the subject of complaints. Again, the WHOIS system is an important tool to use that. And right now, today, I can still do that. I can find out a registrant name. I can find out other information to contact that registrant. So I just wanted to sort of bring an issue that has a lot of jargon and a lot of technical terms down to a real-world perspective. I also want to let you know that there are many privacy concerns implicated. You and I may have received lots of spam in our email boxes. We may be enticed to click on a link, and that turns out to be a link that is trying to dupe us into providing sensitive information like our bank account or a credit card number. It may be that information has been harvested, for example, from public information in the Whois, if you and I have actually bought a domain name. So sometimes this information can be abused, and certainly our privacy colleagues also point to examples where information that is in the public Whois is used to harm people who are engaging in protected political speech. So there's lots of different equities at play here, and there is no one right answer. This is really this is work. This is a dialogue. This is a lot of thinking about where do we draw the line, and indeed the General Data Protection Regulation, which has been the catalyst for the recent ICANN activities, really has shown a light on these issues, and also baked into this legislation is balancing. So even though it's called the General Data Protection Regulation, it doesn't just protect personal information. It mandates that you have to balance the interests. There are legitimate purposes that are recognized under this regulation. Certainly law enforcement interests are recognized. The fight against fraud and deceptive conduct is recognized. Public interest is recognized, but things need to be balanced. Things need to be proportionate. Purposes need to be defined. And I know my colleague, Catherine, is much more immersed in the nitty-gritty of this than I am. But I just wanted to talk about this at a high level to tell you a little bit about what the Whois is and a little bit about the balancing that is baked into the General Data Protection Regulation by way of background. I'm going to take a pause, because I still think that perhaps people just may have questions about what I'll term are some of the basic foundational issues, and I want to make sure that we're providing pauses for folks to ask questions if we can explain things further. So hopefully people are still digesting. what we can do now is give a little bit of background information about some recent activities, just to catch people up on particular key activities that have gone on and bring us to where we are today. And I'm going to turn it over to my colleague Catherine for that.
Thank you so much, Loreen. This is Catherine for the record for this very comprehensive yet succinct overview of what the Whois does and how we've been what the GDPR does in relation to these types of data. I just want to take one moment to highlight the particular situation that we are in here, which is a part of this challenge that we're now facing on making sure that the Whois is made compliant with data protection rules. We are we're working as governments in a sort of public-private cooperation setting here. So we have a public resource, the internet, that is governed for the purposes of DNS allocation and DNS administration by a set of private contracts to which we as governments are not party. And nonetheless, these private contracts also have to serve a public interest. And that is why we are all here, to make sure that the way the DNS is administered is done in such a way as to take important public policy considerations into account. And the WHOIS provides a very basic level of accountability that is essential for maintaining public policy interests in the security and stability of the DNS, but also in the security and safety of citizens and in the fight against crime. And the importance to the community as a whole of the WHOIS is also recognized in ICANN's bylaws in various places. And just to highlight that the WHOIS even gets its own specific review, where we're currently engaging in reviewing whether the WHOIS meets a number of criteria. And especially highlighted in the bylaws is the ability of the WHOIS to meet the needs of law enforcement agencies and to promote consumer interests. So those are considerations that are even baked into ICANN's very backbone, into the community's backbone in terms of how we work together. And the strong importance of these issues to the GAC, I think, was also highlighted in the exceptionally high attendance we've had at these very last-minute phone calls now on reacting to the proposed interim model that ICANN has put forward, and where I think the GAC can be quite proud of its record turnaround time to have submitted comments just 1 week after the interim model was first proposed last Thursday. And that brings me to the timeline. So just to put everybody on the same page, you have a very detailed outline of all the fascinating history of the rapid developments unfolding now in the story of the WHOIS and the GDPR in your briefing materials for Agenda Item 21. So I would invite you to refer to that timeline for more details. I just want to highlight a couple of main points here. And really as Laureen has already said, the GDPR has served as a catalyst for a discussion that has in fact started back in 2003 at the very latest, when the European Data Protection Commissioners first started writing letters to ICANN to highlight that there were privacy concerns with the WHOIS as it was run then and now, and that there were concerns in particular about a lack of limitation for possible abuses of that information. Now, as you may be aware, there were several failed efforts to revise the WHOIS policy, and a new policy development process based on a specific expert working group report was launched a couple of years ago and is still ongoing in its efforts to develop a more long-term change to the underlying WHOIS policy. But because it became clear that this change would not be effected in time, ICANN took a decision about interim compliance. Because as Laureen was saying, the GDPR will come into effect on 25th May of this year, and as it has become clear also on the basis of several expert legal opinions that the WHOIS as it stands now is not compliant, we are now looking for an interim solution. And on the 2nd of November, ICANN announced that it was planning to no longer enforce the existing WHOIS policy, which had proven to be non-compliant with data protection legislation, if the contracted parties would provide other solutions that they consider to be data protection compliant. Now, of course, what we want to avoid is a balkanized approach to the WHOIS. So in parallel with this announcement, ICANN also started efforts to come up with one model that would serve as sort of the interim model for compliance purposes to meet requirements of the GDPR and other data protection laws around the world, and at the same time to preserve the existing WHOIS policy to the extent possible. And this interim model would be in place until the more permanent policy design process that is currently ongoing in parallel would conclude. I think we can go to the next slide. So in an effort to advance discussions on this interim model, ICANN proposed on the 12th of January three possible versions of an interim model, which you will remember we also presented to you on a number of calls. So these models were also discussed between the GAC and ICANN in a joint call, and the GAC provided comments on the interim model, as did the European Union in a separate submission, and there were also a number of governments from among the GAC who provided separate comments on this model. There were also a number of community-proposed models. And ICANN took the three models that it published for discussion. It also took the different models that had been proposed by the community and came up with its own, now one proposed interim model that was shared with us almost 2 weeks ago now, 10 days ago now, and on which the GAC commented last week. And as Guilain already said, just before the meeting started, ICANN published additional details about the proposed interim model in a so-called cookbook. So that's where we stand in terms of recent developments. And now, of course, we need to consider what next steps we can take. And as a starting point for that discussion, it might be helpful to go through the position that the GAC has taken on these issues, in which many of you were involved, just to recall some of the key points and also see how they still apply now in view of the new information we received just at the end of last week. And for this, I will give the floor back to my colleague, Laureen.
Before that, I want to take another pause and see if anyone has any questions about recent developments or anything that anyone wants to add about that.
Yeah, Manel speaking here. Just trying to trigger the discussion. So can we, for example, have an essence of how the proposed model compares to the GAC proposed model so that GAC members can weigh in their views, whether this is, I can see also non-GAC members in the room who may would like to share their views as well, so that we can get an interactive and constructive discussion, I hope. Because I think the cookbook was posted very recently. It's like 50 pages, maybe. I'm not sure everyone had the chance to read the whole thing. Sorry, I didn't want to surprise you and put you on the spot.
Sure, we're just trying to find a visual that would serve to support the discussion also, because it always helps if you can read along on the screen, Mel. But we'll have that up in a minute, knowing how quickly things work here with the support staff. So maybe we
can
first...
I think that there was this Excel sheet that's very helpful, I think. Maybe this...
Just ask Fabienne to try and...
Perfect. I think this is a good starting point for the discussion. Thank you. Yes, Thomas, please.
Thanks very much, Manal. Thomas Rickert is my name. And I'd very much like to thank you for opening up the discussion to the entire audience of this room. Now, I think ICANN has made huge progress publicizing both the Calzoni model as well as the cookbook. As you will have read, the GAC is ICANN leadership is asking the GAC for assistance in making the system work, particularly when it comes to gated access. Now we are working under extreme time pressure, and my question to you is how likely, if at all, it will be for the GAC to come up with a legal rationale for making a gated access-based system possible in a compliant fashion, and whether you think that the GAC is going to deliver this or whether individual governments will likely step in and come up with answers.
So I'm far from being an expert here, but let me share my understanding and I'll defer to my colleagues as well. So what I understand is that the proposed accreditation thing right now, which is again a very high abstract proposal. I think we didn't get into the details yet, but I think there are more of two categories of accreditation: the law enforcement and other parties who have a legitimate purpose to access the non-public data. For the law enforcement, I think the proposal is that a list being compiled at the national level by the different governments, and then the only GAC, the only role the GAC have is to compile those lists into a one big list and share it with ICANN. Again, because, I mean, in principle, the GAC is willing to participate and get involved and provide advice, but not get into an operational day-to-day role, of course. The more challenging, but again, we can think of how to update the lists and how frequent would this happen and many more other things. The other challenge is the second category, if I may call them so, because, I mean, and this, I think there is a proposal for setting a code of conduct. Again, the GAC is willing to participate as one of many participants with the community, but I'll stop here. And Gilan, you wanted to, yeah, please.
Yeah, thank you, Manal, and thank you, Thomas, for your question. Well, I don't want to prejudge the discussion we're going to have in the room in GAC, you know, but in my own understanding, in my opinion, the GAC, as it, you know, as its acronym says, we're an advisory committee to the board and to the broader ICANN community on public policy matters, which means we are not ICANN's general counsel, we're not ICANN's compliance team, and we don't represent European DPAs. So we're here to advise the board, but and the broader community in this complex and challenging process to make who is compliant with GDPR. But as Manal has just said, I don't think we are willing to have a heavily operational role in the design of the accreditation programs. But again, I don't want to prejudge the discussion we're going to have. But my feeling is that we really want to focus on our advisory role, and we're really willing to work with the community on that. But we are not asking for any operational role at this stage. But again, it's my understanding.
If I may, can I ask a follow-up question? This is much appreciated, particularly you clarifying that the GAC is not going to take on an operational role. Do you think it will be likely that governments through the GAC will offer their responses in time for implementation by the contracted parties by May 25th? And my second question would be, if you are providing lists, does the GAC envisage to have lists detailed according to who can get access to what? Or is the plan to grant every legitimate requestor access to all data that is not publicized?
Yes, please, Lorraine.
So, Thomas, these are all legitimate questions, but the GAC has not had the opportunity to discuss it among ourselves. Indeed, that's what this part of the time for these discussions are about. So, while I appreciate your questions and they're valid questions, we're not in a position to answer them yet because we are assessing it and haven't reached conclusions. So, it's too early to answer the questions.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, I have Brazil and then Dean.
Thank you.
Netherlands. Brazil, please.
Yes, thank you, Manal. This is Benedicto speaking for the record. Yeah, one thing I've been hearing is about the capacity or ability of the GAC to deliver some inputs in time. And one thing I'd like to say is that the GAC has mechanisms to, and we try to be responsive to demands. We have not been working all countries on that issue, but there are a group of countries that are working diligently, as I understand, and this will come up to the group at some point. So it's, as it was already said, we cannot prejudge whether it will be possible, but it is possible because this is a mechanism and there is very intensive work going on in that regard. So I, as we receive the demand, we'll try to deliver as we try to do in each and every instance. Thank you.
Thank you, Brazil. I have been in the Netherlands. Please introduce yourself.
Sure. Thank you so much. Dean Marks with the Coalition for Online Accountability. I just wanted to mention that we found the GATT comments on the proposed model to be very helpful. I think that certainly the coalition is in agreement with them, and I believe also the intellectual property constituency and the business constituency largely agree with those comments as well. It's our understanding that the proposed interim model is still proposed and it's not set in stone yet, and a number of us are coalescing around the notion that it would be very helpful if in the proposed model that gets decided, if the registrant's email address could still be made publicly available to help find a proportional balance between the legitimate interests of law enforcement and rights enforcement and anti-child abuse and human trafficking and other human rights issues that are implicated by making the internet a safe and secure environment, to keep that publicly accessible in order to facilitate quick remediation of those sorts of abuses. So we hope that will still be considered, and we hope that's something that the GAC will also consider weighing in on with ICANN. In terms of accreditation, do you know that constituents and members of COA, the IPCBC, would welcome working and cooperating with the GAC on an accreditation system for private non-governmental entities to get your input on how that could be done in a way that will meet the deadline but also be in compliance with the GDPR? And so we would welcome exchange, and we are willing to put a lot of work into that on the table as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dean. Netherlands?
Yes, thank you, Manal. First of all, thank you very much for the comprehensive explanation, because this is really an elephant. It's a European elephant, but now it's a worldwide elephant. So a lot of digest. I would like to come down to a certain topic, which is, I think, very much at stake for GEC, for us to have some guidance or give advice to the board, and that's the the certification scheme, which is now proposed. And I think it's not has been thought through in the cookbook, because it's on the end, and it says something, GEC should come up with lists. It's not very well thought of, and I think we should be very much aware that, let's say, the responsibility, according to the GDPR, to come up with legitimate purposes is on the side of the controller, joint controllers of the data, meaning this is ICANN and the registries. So defining legitimate purposes, which we have given guidance, but probably also they are responsible granting access to whom meet some criteria, meaning that this is not a responsibility you get just by asking list transfer to governments, because I think Google, all big enterprises, others who process data, they do not do this like this. They not ask governments come up with the lists, and they do their homework and take up the responsibility. So I think in the first place, ICANN should very much define purposes and criteria. Then secondly, governments can very well assist, but governments, for example, the GEC rep, we are not all the governments of the world. There are a lot of governments outside which are not here. If we took only the GEC member as a kind of liaison, I think we will not cover and we will not have a very comprehensive covering list at all. And then there's the second part of the working with the list. This is a static thing. You give it once, you have to maintain it. Somebody has to maintain it. I think we have experience with mechanisms within ICANN which work, in which, for example, the clearing house for trademarks works. You have a central thing in which people can, according to criteria, accredit themselves or being accredited and being on a list which is transparent, open to the public. I think there are a lot of parallel with what we want to achieve here. So instead of having a bureaucratic system in which from all kind of the world lists come, it's better to have a kind of repository organized and managed by ICANN, which then can be filled or can be filled directly by these organizations who want to be in having access. Of course, you can then think about being vetted or validated by the government, and then, but these systems is much more foolproof, it's not bureaucratic, and, well, you can think about a lot of mechanisms, but just coming up with lists per country is something which is, I think, the worst way to handle this thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Netherlands. I have Norway, but it's also time for the coffee break. So, Norway, is it really brief, or would you like to wait after the coffee break and take your time?
Thank you. It's really brief.
Oh,
I usually
please.
Am very brief. So yeah.
I know. Go ahead.
Well, we would also like to underline the importance principles of the GDPR, that is that it is the data collector or the holder that has to see the granting of the access for the stored registered data, and that this granting is based on the GDPR Article 6. And so one of the big challenges that was mentioned by Thomas Rickett, I think it was the concept of a list and how this could be in compliance with the GDPR. Because a blanket access given based on a list, that you will have all levels of information based on a list, or that you only produce a list and you don't specify what kind of data, is not worth anything, really, because you have to go into the list and see every request for information on every level. Is it based on Article 6? So that is one of the big challenges that we have to discuss in the GAC, how to manage and how to be able to work on the list concept as such. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Norway. So, yeah, it's time for a coffee break now. So this ends this part of the discussion on GDPR. We will reconvene at 10:30 and we will continue on the same topic. Thank you.